What is up? Another episode of Real Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Rico Lorenz, also known as Ricky Brands, and a great episode for you today. Greg Pallas, investigative journalist, New York Times bestselling author, is with me. One of the funny things about doing podcasts, I've been trying to get Greg on for a while because I'm a fan of his work. He's obviously, he's done interviews with Lee Camp. He's been on Democracy Now. He's been on a bunch of RT shows, The Young Turks. He's been a bunch of places, and just somebody that I'm a fan of, and never could get a hold of him. And then one day somebody contacts me and says, hey, you want to have Greg on? So of course I said yes. And this has happened once before with author Stephen Kinzer, who's written a bunch of really good books. And I was trying to get him on also for a while. And then eventually somebody contacts me and asks me if I was willing to have him on to promote his new book, Poisoner in Chief. And I'm like, of course, I've been trying to get a hold of this guy forever. And the full title is Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Definitely go check the archives, look up Ripple Effect Podcast, Stephen Kinzer, and you'll find that interview we did. We talk about MK Ultra and mind control and the CIA and all that stuff. All those topics that people in alternative media love to learn more about. So definitely an interview worth checking out. But today with Greg Pallas, we talk a lot about how to steal elections, how to rig elections, all the dirty tricks that politicians use to manipulate the numbers. With that said, Patreon page. I do have a Patreon page if you want to support the show. If you can't support the show financially, just share the show, tweet the show, upload the show anywhere you want. It's all open source. Hopefully somebody who can support the show financially will listen to it and help out. But if not, then just reviewing the show, doing all that stuff to just attempt to get the word out there is more than enough. With that said, also, shirts will be done soon. I'll keep you guys updated on that. Finally, Ripple Effect Podcast merch. And also another Union of the Unwanted show right around the corner on the 17th. If people aren't familiar with that, it's a live stream show we do when we get a bunch of people from alternative media, different researchers, people, different podcasters, just different people in the alternative media community. Hope to get interesting people together to provoke interesting conversations. And people have really been enjoying that. So keep a lookout for that because we do have some great guests lined up to be joining us on the next one. Enjoy the show, guys. I have a bunch of really awesome guests and shows lined up, so keep a lookout, and I will see you guys in the next one. Peace. It's funny because I've had a few guests throughout the years that are like this, where I've attempted to get them on my show with no luck, and then one day somebody just contacts me and asks, hey, do you want to have Greg on? And I'm like, yeah, I'd love to have Greg on. I'm like, I've been trying to contact him for a few years now.
Yeah, apologies. It's not that I'm a hot shot, just that, you know, there's a million.
Yeah,
it's hard work internationally.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, there, yeah.
Did you get the book, by the way?
I did not get that book yet. No. I know it is it's available already, because I know it is by the title it seems like it's a book from the future.
Yes, it is a book from the future, and it's a book from this 2 weeks ago when it was released.
Awesome.
How Trump Stole 2020.
And you can get that book.
Yeah, you should have been given I should have been sent at least a PDF, if not a rushed physical copy.
Yeah, I'll check my email. Maybe I did get a PDF. I've been getting, you know, it's funny. I've been getting a lot of emails in regards to people on both sides of the political spectrum trying to get on the show. And it's like, some of these people are just too extreme on one side or the other. I'm like,
this is just the facts, ma'am. I'm nonpartisan. I have a not-for-profit foundation. We cannot be partisan. And also I work for a lot of media outlets, you know, like The Guardian. We can't be, we can't take a position. I never do. It's one of the wonderful things about being a journalist is that you don't have to take a position, do you?
Yeah.
You have to be nonpartisan, so I love it, because then no one bitches at me for my position. Absolutely. Sorry, can't take one. So yes, so the book. So were you given given a little intro paragraph about who I am? Oh, good.
Well, I've been a huge fan of yours for a long time. I mean, you're one of the few investigative journalists that you know, have actually been doing real journalism for a long time. You know, I've had Ben Swan on recently. You know, he's another one who does a good work. But there's not a whole lot of people like yourself anymore. I mean, and I think that's why podcasts and even books are still kind of popular, because, you know, you watch the news, you watch or you listen to the radio. Everything seems like they're selling you a agenda. It doesn't seem like they're having like real discussions about real ideas and and whatnot. So, you know, we need people like yourself who are just like you said, you'll call a ball and a strike, you kind of just call it how you see it. And you have, you've have exposed people from both sides of the political spectrum.
That's correct. Yeah. If you read the book, even though Trump's name is on the title, How Trump Stole 2020, you think it's all about, oh, I'm bashing Republicans. Well, he's the president, so he's going to be the biggest target. But the, but there's chapters on the Democratic Party as well. And so that, I know that that disturbs some of my Democratic Party friends, but I have no choice. I am an investigative reporter, which you can tell by the hat. But even, but there's very few of us left. Maybe there's not enough hats. I don't know what it is. But but no, it's very expensive and very difficult to do. And in fact, I know you're recording, so I figure it's not a waste of time, unless you want to start again or do something.
No, let's get right into it. Yeah, okay. keep it going.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the issues for me is that it's investigative reporting, to do it well, takes a long time. There's, I've been investigating, for example, what's been happening to the voter rolls in Georgia for 7 years. 7 years on one story. Now, I've had outlets from Rolling Stone to Al Jazeera to The Guardian to Democracy Now, whatever, but and MSNBC. But I have, but the only way that a 7 year thing can be done is that I have my own foundation, the Palace Investigative Fund, because these investigations actually can run well over $100,000 each to do. And there's no paper in the United States, and I include the New York Times or others in that, who have the resources to do this type of investigation. So we're kind of like a baby ProPublica, except that we actually put more people on a single story than any news outlet ever could. So I have as many as 18 experts on this story of what's happening to our voter rolls in America as we go into the election. So I have to be independent. It's not for profit and it's nonpartisan. And then I can go to the papers and say, look, I've got a gigantic story, which you don't have the time or money to do, but I've done it, and now just partner with me. So that's how we're operating now. I'm trying to get the word out. I'm trying to protect voters, but I don't care who you vote for. I really don't. I mean, hey, let's let the voters decide this time. What do you say?
Was that a concern of yours when you're picking a title for your book, that people would think that, hey, this is all about just bashing Trump, and it's not,
yeah,
it's not somebody who's going to be looking at the facts. It's somebody who obviously already has an agenda or whatnot. Were you worried about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was. I was worried that people would say, oh, it's just a Trump bashing book. And look, Donald Trump is not my favorite. Okay. In fact, if you kind of confront 95% of my fellow reporters, they're not Trump fans. Trump is correct. The media doesn't like him. But this is not about who I like or don't like. I'm not a pundit. You turn on these shows. See, punditry is cheap. You just blather and you talk and you say what your opinion is. Here's what I think and here's what I don't. Oh, he ought to pick Stacey Abrams for Vice President Biden. Oh, no. Or, are they reaching the soccer moment? I don't care. I don't care. What I care about is stories that no one else is reporting. And in this case, I'm talking about the fact that in America, in the 21st century, we're still doing two big questions. Why don't we count all the votes? And second, when are black people and other voters of color going to be allowed to vote without sticking an obstacle course in front of them? In other words, when do we actually realize Martin Luther King's dream? And it's after George Floyd. It's something we can definitely talk about.
Well, so the title of the book, people are going to wonder, well, then how did he steal the election? How did he steal 2020? What are the tactics? And these tactics aren't, I mean, because obviously you hear stories of like JFK when he won, that, you know, they had a bunch of dead people that were voting for him, and story. I mean, obviously the famous Gore versus Bush election. You know, that there was a lot of fuckery going on there, a lot of, you know, really interesting stuff. So it's neither side is innocent by far. And I've even heard you say how one of the worst states is California. And
that's right.
Right.
Yes. In fact, if you go by sheer numbers of voters who have been tossed off voter rolls, blocked from having their votes counted, ballots rejected. For example, nearly 500,000 provisional ballots were rejected, that were cast by citizens of California, rejected by California and that's the Democratic Party. So in terms of sheer numbers, there's no state which has been more vicious towards voters than California, and that's because it's a one-party Democratic state. I'm sorry, Democrats who want me to say, ooh, it's only the GOP which is evil. No, no, no. It's about, you know what it is? You got parties of the people who run stuff. And the guys who run stuff don't want to give it to the guys who don't run stuff. You know, so they don't want to give up their posts, and it doesn't matter what party they're in. So, look, yeah, it's both. But, you know, how Trump stole 2020. And by the way, so I did decide on basically a shock title because I want you to ask me what you just asked me. I got the response I wanted from my title, How Trump Stole 2020, which is how did Trump steal 2020 and why is it in the past tense? And the simple answer, by the way, rather than keep you in suspense, is that it's in past tense because 16.7 million people have already been removed from the voter rolls in the past 2 years of records. 16.7 million people who, when they ask for a mail-in ballot, won't get them and they don't know why. Most of these people have no idea that they've lost their right or their ability to vote in their elections. The purges happen, for the most part, with in complete ignorance to the voter, and you're shafted. And that's the biggest single problem. So we have all these people removed from the voter rolls, but here's the good news. We can kind of steal it back. That is, we can bust the burglary and we can change things. One is to add, is to raise hell and say, why are these people being removed? The other is to, by the way, protect your own vote. Look up your own registration. I did in California and it said Greg Palast, no such voter. So I re-registered online and saved my vote. Everyone in America could do that and must do that. And the book opens with a voter who didn't do that. Christine Ford. I was in the Atlanta schoolhouse where she'd been voting for 50 years, or this was going to be her 50th year of voting. She went in dressed to the nines for this special event, 50 years of voting in one place. And they said, get out. You're not registered here anymore. Her great niece, 92, her great niece was in tears after all she's done for the civil rights movement. I go, what do you mean? And so I went back to her home. And there was a picture of her having dinner with Martin Luther King, her cousin. He came to her house every Sunday after sermonizing at the Ebenezer Baptist. She lost her vote. If after 50 years, the cousin of Martin Luther King can lose their vote, you can lose yours. Get wise. Look up. Go to your Secretary of State or Board of Elections or County Board of Elections and see if you're still registered. I wasn't. Christine Ford wasn't. Raheem Shabazz wasn't. Allison Smith, a Latina woman, wasn't. These are all in Atlanta. Then I've taken this issue is struck all over the country, and in Atlanta, and in Georgia, which is where I've been investigating, which is where the book starts. Christine Jordan wasn't alone. 340,134 people, to be exact, and I am exact, were removed from the voter rolls for having left Georgia or left their city like Atlanta, who never left. And how do I know 340,134 people, including Christine Jordan, did not move? Is that I hired the people who know where you live. And they are, you call them Amazon, you call them eBay. These companies have specialists who are address list specialists. That's all they do is know where you live, and they use over 240 databases. Where did you get your pizza delivered? Where did you get the porn delivered? Where are you turning on when you order pizza, then you turn on Netflix? Where is Netflix delivering your movie? And such simple things as where do you pay your taxes? The state of Georgia and many other states don't even look at their own state records. They don't look at your driver's licenses. Where's your driver's license? Where are you paying property taxes? Where are you getting your paycheck? You'd think they would check these things to see if you've moved. No, they don't. They simply, you know what they used? They said, if you've missed voting twice, well, that means that you've obviously left. Forget whether the lists are accurate. Not voting. That's an American tradition. Most Americans don't vote in the midterm. So you miss two elections. They say you've moved away. They send you a postcard, looks like junk mail, throw that away, you've thrown away your vote. A third of a million in Georgia, 800,000 in Ohio. And right now I'm investigating Wisconsin, where the state has said, we have a purge list. This is called purging, you know, just erasing voters from the voter rolls. And the state of Wisconsin, the bipartisan board of elections, says we've been given this list by the state legislature, which is Republican controlled. They want us to remove 152,000 people in the ultimate swing state, Wisconsin. And we think this list is phony. We think that we don't think these people have moved. We're not sure. This list looks really questionable. So unusually, they turned to me. Usually I'm suing or fighting or exposing government. Here, government actually turned to me and said, Greg Palast, you have the experts in the team. Can you go through our purge list and tell us whether these people have really left Wisconsin, or are they just being skedaddled off the list because maybe they're the wrong color or the wrong party and they're being removed? So all I can tell you is I won't give you the final results because there will be a big newspaper which is putting that out that I'm working with. I can't say whom. But I can tell you this. I'll give you one name, Sequana Taylor. They said that she had left Milwaukee. So, of course, so I went to Ms. Taylor and I said, why are you voting in Milwaukee or trying to vote in Milwaukee when you don't live here? And she said, I think I live here. I'm Milwaukee County Supervisor. That's who's on the list. So they said the Milwaukee County Supervisor moved out of Milwaukee. I don't think so, but I do know this. She was guilty of voting while black, and that's a big issue. Too many of the people on the list are black or Latino, and you know who they're really going after, who's really vulnerable, are young people. In Wisconsin, the biggest group of voters that's at risk of losing their vote who were targeted are University of Wisconsin students. They don't really move, but they move dorm room to dorm room, sofa to sofa. That doesn't mean that they've left the University of Wisconsin at Madison. It just means that they're shuffling around as students do semester to semester. Should that mean that they lose their right to vote for the president?
Yeah, I mean, but it's some of these techniques to win the elections, I mean, it's almost unavoidable, right? Like you every election, there's going to be some more questionably moral or unmoral things going on. I mean, just locally, I live in Ludlow, Massachusetts, which is right outside of like Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yep.
And in Holyoke, Massachusetts, when they had an election, we have like a family owned construction company, a little construction company, and we're doing some work near the projects in Holyoke. And during their election, when this Democratic person was running for mayor, he was going around with these vans, going to the projects, knocking on doors, saying, I'll give you a ride to go give go get a vote. To vote if you hop in this van, I'll give you a ride, you know, and just knocking on doors. They had like a whole team doing this. Cool. And something like that, it's like, you know, it kind of creates this question like, okay, well, technically you're not forcing them to vote for you, but you're giving them a ride. Maybe they wouldn't otherwise be going out to vote. Is it morally wrong or right? I mean,
I think it's right. I'll tell you, I want to make a distinction. I don't mean to interrupt, but I'll make a distinction. You try to get your voters to the polls. You give them rides. You convince them. You convince people to vote for you. You write them letters. You shake their hands. That's campaigning. I'm not too worried about that. Here's what I'm worried about is stopping your opponent's voters from voting and just the general screw-ups. Now, some of it is intentional and vicious and racist and very un-American. But some of it's just pure, they don't know what the heck they're doing. Like, let me tell you, in New York, we just had the primaries there. They still don't know the winner in the Silk Stocking district of Manhattan. At that election was what, 2 months ago? And they still don't have a winner because they rejected, are you ready for this? 28% of all mail-in ballots, and most ballots are mailed in, 28% of all mail-in ballots were rejected. People don't understand how dangerous mail-in voting is. And I'm not talking about were they trying to stop voters from voting? Well, the different sides are arguing, oh, they did it on purpose. The Justice Democrats are saying that the establishment Democrats are stealing their votes, da da da. And that may be right. I don't know. I do know this, that 28% of mail-in ballots, 1 in 3, were never counted in New York. and including things like, because as we move to mail-in voting, I want people to understand, I want you to save your vote, because it's very easy to lose your vote by mail. And I'm not talking about what our president says. Forget all that. Forget, oh, that they're going to mail a million votes from Venezuela and steal an election. No, no, that's actually impossible, because each ballot is assigned to a voter. It's really easy to catch. I was, by the way, an investigator for the Justice Department, and I can tell you, I can catch you like that if you're an illegal voter voting. I can catch you in a flash. I do, okay? But the important thing is to get your vote counted, and we lose a lot of votes. There's a chapter in How Trump Stole 2020 called Mail-In Madness. We have to understand that while you may be shocked that 28% of voters who mailed in their ballots in New York didn't get them counted, they were tossed out, the average is 22%. 22% of mail-in votes are lost, according to a study by MIT. Greg Palast is only reporting it. I didn't make this up. It's MIT, and then Caltech also has a similar voting project. 22% of all ballots, 1 in 5, mailed in, never get counted. Now, why? There's two reasons. Number one, you don't get the ballot in the first place. 1 in 10 people who ask for a mail-in ballot don't get them. They just don't arrive, or they don't arrive in time. The second is that mail-in ballots, once they're mailed in, are subject to rejection. See, when you go into a voting booth and you push a button or something, it's pretty much going to count. Not always, but it does count more often than not. With mail-in votes, for example, one of the problems in New York is that you have to be postmarked by Election Day. Well, guess what? And New York kindly gives you a prepaid return envelope. Every state should do that. Here's the problem, New York. The post office does not postmark prepaid mail. So you literally had thousands and thousands, at least 12,000 ballots, which were not counted because they weren't postmarked. But the post office doesn't postmark those ballots. So halfway through the mail-in process, the postmaster general in New York City ordered the postal sorters to run these ballots through the machine, which would give them a postmark. But that was about half the ballots. The other half never got a postmark. So was this deliberate? I don't know. I would doubt it. I don't know. But I'll tell you this, thousands of people lost their vote. Did it make a difference? Oh, you bet, because there's just a few hundred votes difference between the two candidates for Congress. Now imagine November. Good luck.
Did you ever watch that documentary? I believe it was an HBO documentary, Hacking Democracy.
Yes. Yeah. Those are friends of mine.
Oh, are they? Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that? I mean, it almost seems like it's unavoidable to have a fair election almost, right?
Well, as I point out in the book, I've been doing this 20 years, and I'd like to stop. You mentioned Florida and Florida in 2000, the Bush Gore campaign. I was working for The Guardian and BBC Television, and what I uncovered was that Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, and his secretary of state, a woman named Catherine Harris, who is, while she's running the vote, she's in charge of the Bush campaign for election versus Gore. They removed 94,000 voters from the voter rolls, most of them African Americans. And I'm not guessing, because it said BLA next to their names, as it does. Florida keeps the record of a race on your voter roll. So they removed tens of thousands of African Americans as felons. And I found out, I got a hold of the list and found out that exactly zero, none was an illegal ex-con voter. Not one was an illegal voter, but tens of thousands of black people pulled from the voter rolls, and George Bush is declared president of the United States by just 537 votes. Not electoral votes. I'm talking about ballots in Florida. 537 votes gave him Florida, the Electoral College, and the presidency. And that was done by removing black people from the voter rolls. I thought that'd be it. We expose it to be done. Mm-mm. Because it succeeded, they did variations and rolled it across the country. No state today stops you from voting if you have a record, a felony record. So they have other things. You've moved, like Saquana Taylor, moved from Milwaukee, even though she's Milwaukee County Supervisor. Or, they come up with, or you're registered in two states. This was one of their favorites. Massachusetts, your state, was in this program called Interstate Crosscheck. Well, I investigated Interstate Crosscheck for Rolling Stone, and what did I find? That they were removing people. I don't know if they had many Ricardo Verandeses that they found, but in my book, you'll see a chapter called 568 James Browns. This hit list of so-called voters voting in multiple states. In Georgia, they removed 568 guys named James Brown because they found a James Brown in Detroit and a James Brown in Baltimore and a James Brown in Boston. And they said, oh, they must all be the same James Brown. Even though they had different middle initials, doesn't matter. Now, why would they bother doing this, something this crazy? And the answer is... what's the color of James Brown? And I can tell you that I went through the list, and 1 in 7 African-Americans in the nation were on this hit list of people voting twice, because that's the history of slavery. James Brown, John Jackson, and by the way, Jose Garcia, he voted in 29 states, according to these guys. So every year they come up with new tricks. And by the way, Massachusetts pulled out of that program of the so-called double voters. Bless them, when they read my report in Rolling Stone that your state pulled out, and then the whole thing ultimately collapsed. So I thought, oh, I can retire. No, I can't. They got new gimmicks.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, in three states, I think I believe I heard you saying this in an interview before, that in three states you have to notarize your vote. I mean, it's you already have such a low percentage of voter turnout. Why would you make it any harder? I mean, we have a small business. Even notarizing just anything is a pain in the butt, you know. It's like, oh,
right,
I gotta...
now.
Well, yeah. I mean, just yeah.
Exactly. So, like in Alabama, you have to have a notary. Where do you get a notary in the middle of a lockdown? And by the way, we used to call that a poll tax. It's like $15 to vote. Do you have to notarize your ballot? Same in Missouri. Or the other is at least 8 states require that you have a witness signature. Now in Alabama, you could do without the notary. But you'll have to have 2 witness signatures. And I hope, you know, you got to do 2 things. Make sure that they are registered citizens when you get their signatures. And you better probably also test them for the virus. You know, it's crazy. Like you say the right thing. You're asking, Ricardo, the exact right question. Why do we make voting difficult? I have traveled the world. My wife is Swiss. They don't have any. They have the first democracy. Sorry, America was not the first democracy. They had the first democracy. And they don't have any of this stuff with notarizing ballots, witnesses, all this. They don't even have voter registration. And by the way, they have a bigger foreign population percentage-wise than we do. They don't think that people are going to start.
My parents worked there for years. My parents worked. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and they don't think, oh, the Verandes family, oh, they're going to sneak in and vote. No, they assume people are not dishonest, because you know what? People aren't dishonest. And despite what our president said, no, we don't have massive vote fraud. In fact, in my book, I did a calculation. I talked to Professor Lorraine Minniti. She's the number one voting fraud expert in America. And I got her numbers for number of fraudulent voters. And I did a simple calculation. And calculated that the chance of your casting an illegal vote, like in 2 states or mailing in 2 votes, is 1/5 as likely as you're being hit and killed by lightning. So a lightning strike is 5 times more likely than an illegal ballot. It just doesn't happen. But what does happen, and no one's talking about it just about except you and me right now, is that you can cast a vote and lose it. So I want everyone to be, the first thing is protect your ballot. Everyone should be super careful. make sure that you apply. One, you're not going to get a mail-in ballot unless you're registered. Check your registration first. When you check your registration, you either re-register if it ain't there or the wrong address. I'm sorry, if you've moved an apartment within your building, please re-register. We had people in Georgia and in Milwaukee who've lost their vote because they moved within their building. Yeah, it's against the law to take away your vote for moving within your building. But listen, man, I'm telling you how to save your vote. I'm not telling you what should be.
Yeah.
So ask early, register, ask early for your mail-in ballot. When you get it, be super careful to follow that state's instructions. And at gregpalace.com, I'm going to have instructions up as carefully as I can get them. And in states where they are winning court battles or getting governors to say, oh, you don't need, like in Missouri, they said, you don't need to notarize your ballot this year. Well, I wouldn't take that for granted, because I think the Republican Party is likely to go to court and get that overturned. And if you don't have that notarization on your mail-in ballot, you're going to lose your vote. So even if you think the rules are insane, like in many, many states, you have to mail in a photocopy of your ID, check that. Well, just do it. I'm sorry that voting ain't easy in America. I didn't create the system, but I'm warning you how the system is going to take away your vote unless you protect it.
And I mean, do you believe that a lot of these speed bumps are, they're not designed to make things, I guess, more valid, the voting process more valid, but maybe obviously purposely designed to make it difficult for these reasons to either have these question marks with certain, I guess, states? Oh, we don't know, you know, we can't count these, some of these are disqualified, no. Like, is it all just designed to have all these loopholes and kind of to push or manipulate the numbers in one direction or the other?
Absolutely. One of the look, people who come up with these rules are professionals in voting. They know what happens when you add an ID law. You immediately, for example, 2 weeks before the 2016 election, 2 weeks, the courts approved a Republican voted plan to require state photo ID to vote in Wisconsin. Now, why? You said why? What's their excuse? Oh, to stop voter fraud. You know, someone's going to walk in and I'm going to say, I'm Ricardo Verandas. Give me his ballot, or give me my ballot. Excuse me. I misspoke. Give me my ballot. And say, well, show us your ID, Ricardo. And then I don't have your photo ID. And they've busted a fraudulent voter. Guess what? That's never happened. They haven't busted in 100 years of record keeping. They couldn't find one person in Wisconsin impersonating another voter. And yet this voter ID requirement immediately disenfranchised, that is, blocked 50,000 African Americans, mostly in Milwaukee, from voting. Why? Well, you could use your driver's license, but think about it. Who doesn't have a driver's license? Well, people who don't have cars, people who live in Milwaukee in apartment buildings and use the bus, they have no reason to have a driver's license. Well, the court said they can go into the DMV and get a non-driver's photo ID. But look at the rigmarole. A black person, urban, lives in an apartment building, has to go through to vote, but you just use your license. So immediately they know who it's benefiting and who they aren't. And to really underscore, to show that there's really intent and not trying to stop fraud at all, is that while they said you need a state photo voter ID, the state gave 182,000 students at the University of Wisconsin a state photo ID, which they cannot use to vote. By law, they are barred from using their student ID. Now, who do students vote for? I wouldn't say that was a strong Trump vote in 16. So they knocked out 100,000 students. They knocked out 50,000 African-American voters. And Trump won the state by 22,000. Now, I don't have a problem if Donald Trump wins a state or is elected president. I'm happy to live with the results of democracy. And I'm not going to tell you who I will or won't vote for. But I'll tell you this. If Trump wins, that's fine, because the voters voted for him. If he wins because of trickery, because of gotcha games with IDs and mail-in votes that they reject and challenge and secret purges of voter rolls, no, that's not an election. That's not American. And that's what I'm trying to expose. So we give the choice back to the voters and not to the tricksters.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the mail-in ballots, I mean, there is, you know, it is frustrating a little bit about how people can go to the grocery store, they can go to, you know, gather in many different places, but yet they're saying that you can't go to the polls, which to me seems a little ridiculous because it seems like it would be an easier place to manage people, keep them distancing, have them wear masks, all that stuff. And our infrastructure, you know, I just don't think last second it'd be really smart to just change the way we do things and then also think that we can do it in a productive way where there's not going to be some messing up or make it easier for somebody to manipulate the numbers in either direction. I mean, I'm on your side. I think that, you know, anywhere there's people, there's going to be corruption. You know, I always say on this show how, like, the left thinks that, you know, the root of all evil are corporations. The right thinks the root of all evil is government. And the one thing they both have in common is they're run by people. So I think the root of all evil, you know, has a common denominator that it's just corrupt people. Anywhere where there's people, there's going to be, you know, people, there's going to be corruption, you know.
Well, that's the problem is that, and that's why I say, that's why, look, when you put the Democratic Party and you create a one state system in California where there's no checks and balances, they're going to abuse their power. And they do. And in Ohio, as soon as they took control of both the legislature and the state house, boom, they started removing voters. So Democrats, Republicans, yeah, when you give people power to control who gets to vote and whose votes get counted, you are begging for mischief. That, and you're right, it is human nature. But what we have to do is we have to protect our democracy together. And that's important. Now, so when you say mail-in voting is difficult, Here's some of the practical problems. We don't have enough people working the polling stations. Almost everyone who works a polling station, I just looked up the figures, by the way, it's like about 80% of poll workers are 60 years older or older. And, you know, they're a danger for the COVID virus, so they can't get the poll workers. So here's what I advise people. If you're like me, I'm highly at risk. Well, I had to make sure that I was registered, so I had to re-register because I wasn't. Then I had to get the ballot, so carefully fill it out, and make sure I signed it as I registered and signed it carefully and filled it all out. And I, in Los Angeles, I could take it to a drop box, which is good. If you are in a drop box situation, please take advantage of it. Do try to avoid the post office. They had a complete collapse in New York. They had a complete collapse in Georgia. They are not set up for this to become a polling station. Our post office aren't designed for it. So you're taking a risk. Now, one of the things you can do, most states you can vote early. Don't think of election day, think of election month. So at the end of October, some states it's a month, some states it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 1 week. I have found that when you go into the early voting stations on a weekday, during the day or early evening, no one's there. Completely. I've been all over this country. Early voting stations midweek tend to be empty. That's when it's safe for you to go in. That is a good time to do it if you can. And if you can't, you got to take the steps to protect your mail-in ballot. In fact, in How Trump Stole 2020, or if you don't want to get the book, you can always just go to gregpalace.com and we get what I call the ballot condom. For safe voting. That is, no, it's not, you don't wrap it around the ballot, but you do follow the 7 steps to protect your vote, starting with checking your registration and asking for your mail-in ballot real, real early.
What's your opinion for people who you know, kind of like myself, who look at the fact that we have like McDonald's and Burger King, we have the Democrats or the Republicans. I know you've been on Ralph Nader's show a bunch of times. I'm a big fan of any third party that goes against the grain. I've had Jesse Ventura on. I'm a fan of, you know, Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, anybody who goes against the grain, I like. And mm-hmm. And people who seem honest and like they, even if you disagree with them, at least they seem like this is who they are. These are their beliefs. They have some sense of beliefs. Like you feel like, okay, they have morals, they have beliefs, they have a ideology, and you can kind of understand where they stand on certain issues, where like most politicians today. It's they just tell you whatever you want to hear until they get your vote. Then they just, you know, and then they vote in any direction, you know, based on whoever's you know, the lobbyists, how much money they're giving them. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've had Jack Abramoff on, you know, he's in, you know, he wrote that. Yeah, he was on, it was after he did time. And now, you know, I think I asked him too. I'm like, hey, you know, do you think if you didn't end up in jail, would you be writing this book about, you know, how corrupt the whole system is? But the lobbyists do control, they have so much influence. And do you think, like, people like myself who look at, you know, the election, we're like, well, look, Bernie got screwed by his own party. You have, you know, Ralph Nader, who's been screwed over and over again. People, anybody who goes against the grain, voting, like, you're just vote, like, in foreign policy, for example, never really changes. It doesn't matter if it's Bush, if it's Obama, you know, our drone attacks continue, our intervention in the Middle East, our, you know, what's going on in Venezuela, would have happened regardless. You know, we would have been, like, our foreign policy basically just doesn't really change from one president to another. Why vote? Like, what would you say to people like that?
Well, I would say that, look, if you're expecting a miracle, if you think that you can vote for the Beatles and all you can get is some old bubblegum group from the 70s, we have to make choices. And I'm not going to tell people whether to vote for or a third party or not. You know, if that strikes you as the way to make your protest against the system, bless you. My whole thing is letting votes count, letting people vote and make their choice. And, you know, I do believe it's not that people are waiting to be inspired by a politician. I always think that that's a really bad idea. You vote and the politicians follow. They don't lead. So the more people who vote, the more people who express their views, the better our politicians will get. So it's not that you should wait for the good politician. We need better class of voters. That is, we need more voters and people not to lose their vote. Once that happens, voting, then things get accomplished. It's not like nothing has ever happened in America. We did win a Voting Rights Act in 1965, and now the Supreme Court gutted that act in 2013. But you know what? Two steps forward, one backwards. Listen, a lot of people didn't vote in the last election because thought Hillary had it, or they were pissed off, or they voted for my friend Jill Stein, or they, you know, whatever. They weren't happy with the choices that they had. And the University of Wisconsin study, besides saying that shafting the students and shafting African Americans in Milwaukee allowed Trump his margin, but the truth is, they also said that 50,000 students didn't want to vote because they didn't like the choices. Well, I'm sorry, that means that someone else is making the choice for you. Dear University of Wisconsin students, you 50,000 who decided not to vote because you didn't have the ID, but you just didn't like the choices, do you like the choice that other people made for you? If you're happy with other people making your choice for you and you like what we got now, hey, don't vote. You're getting what you're happy with. But if you want to decide who rules your life, then you vote. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. Think about it. If you are ruled by people you didn't choose, isn't that the definition of being a slave? Don't be a slave. You make your choices. You pick your leaders. And you demand that they listen to your voice and count your vote.
So I agree with everything you said, but to be the devil's advocate, if people are saying, like, okay, I don't like my two options. For example, a lot of the Bernie supporters and Trump supporters, I still believe a lot of them had much in common, and not so much in ideology, because I think Trump lacks any ideology. But I think it's more about it was a protest vote, you know, or a protest.
Yes, it was.
It was one of those things where, like, we were sick of the Bushes, we're sick of the Clintons, we're sick of the same old cookie cutter politician. We want something different, regardless if it's better. It doesn't have to be better; it just has to be different. And I think that's why both of them were so so for their people. For Trump, supporters were really passionate. The Bernie supporters were really passionate. And then when you see, like, Bernie get screwed by his own group, then if you're a Democrat or you're a progressive or you're, you know, whatever word you want to use, if you're on the left, you'd be like, okay, well, I have Hillary and I have Trump. I don't like Hillary and I don't like Trump. Like, so do I, you know, some people say, do you waste, because that was the argument, right, with Ralph Nader. People would said that, oh, if you vote for Ralph Nader, then you're helping this party or you're helping that party. You know, don't waste your vote. So it's one of those things where just like, and you talked about your wife. I was born in Portugal. In Europe, in much of Europe, I mean, you have many political parties, not just two. And so you have many more options. You know, you have a Labour Party, you have a whatever party. And here it's like they give you two options. So it makes it much easier to control. And you don't really feel like you have a choice. And I keep saying, like, people's thinking should be much more complex than be able to fit in two boxes where either I agree with this party with every issue at all times, or I agree with this party with every issue of all times. Like, we shouldn't. Like, no person should agree with their party on every issue all the time, because we should have more complex thinking and we should think for ourselves. And there's going to be cases where one party makes more sense on the way they look at something and vice versa. So, I mean, there's people who truly believe, like, okay, you're giving me, you know, just two parties, that's it. And if I don't agree with either one of them, what do I do? Do I vote for a third party? And is that considered a wasted vote? Or do I, you know, so for people who aren't voting, you know, I think that's much of their case is like, well, I don't like my options. And if I vote for a third party, it doesn't really mean much. I mean, I live in Massachusetts, and a lot of people who are Republicans in Massachusetts are like, what's the point of voting, right? And some people make the argument about electoral votes. Like, okay, well, if the popular vote doesn't matter, then, you know, what does it matter? I live in a blue state. So would you want to expand on any of those thoughts?
A couple. One, some of it is way beyond me. It's philosophical whether you should vote third party if you're unhappy with the choices of the two main parties. I can't answer that. That you got to answer in your heart. But I would ask you this. I will demand one thing. Whether you pick the top two parties, or you go for the third or the fourth or the fifth party, that's up to you. But go for one. Lay out your case. If you think that the elites are shafting you and you're simply not going to vote for their candidate, then find your candidate. By the way, we often talk about Jill Stein, but of course the real third party candidate that affected the last election was Gary Johnson, who got four times as many votes as Jill Stein, was a huge force in places like Minnesota and Utah, New Mexico, and Wisconsin. And I have to say, so, you know, I just want you to vote, and it could be Jill Stein, Gary Johnson, write in Bernie Sanders, whatever you want to do, but I want you to vote. And by the way, there's another thing to do. You know, there's more than the president on the ballot. In fact, in the case of California, it's ridiculous. The thing's a minor novel that you have to go through to vote, which is one of, by the way, it's a bit of a problem, to say the least, in our balloting. But there's more than one race on the ballot. And therefore, it's very, very important that you get in. And there's one other thing that you have to understand. They're now using a new way to remove voters from the voter rolls. If you are so-called inactive voter, and no, Ricardo, it doesn't mean that they know that you didn't get to the gym this week. Inactive means that you skipped a couple of elections, often one. And so if you don't vote in this election, they may not let you vote in the next one. And you, again, you won't know it. They may send you a postcard that looks like a piece of junk mail, or they sent it to your last dorm room or something, but you won't get it and you won't know it and you won't, and you've now lost your vote. And say, then you get all excited and say, oh, well, I want to vote for this congressional candidate in 2024 or 2022. And you go to vote and your name ain't there. So one reason to vote is so you can keep voting next time. I know that sounds crazy. I didn't make up the system, Ricardo. I'm just writing about it. So I'm telling you, they're removing people for not voting. So you better vote. It's called use it or lose it. And there you go. There's a good reason to vote. Use it or lose it. Because if you don't vote, you ain't going to vote next time.
I'm also hearing stories from many people, actually, in Massachusetts and Connecticut, where they're getting multiple letters at multiple different addresses. And I mean, you think that's a mistake, or is that a technique in trying to get people to have more than one vote?
We haven't seen the double voting because, you know, here's the problem for double voters. You get 5 years in the slammer. And if you're foreign, you get 10 years and you're deported immediately and automatically after you're 10. So what do you do? No, so people don't commit this type of double voting ballot fraud. If someone may put in a request from one address, or like California, it's automatic. You get a mail-in ballot. We're a mail-in opt-out state. That means I get a ballot no matter what. And I've gotten ballots from the prior residents of this, for the prior residents of this house. But if I dare vote those, it'll be seconds before they catch it, because in the computers, they know, even though they sent the ballot, they also know, because you have partisan people looking out. You do have the parties, you know, some people in the parties watching like hawks for bad votes. They'll catch it. And then if they catch it, you're in the slammer. I don't know of anyone ever, that there have been about a dozen cases I've looked at of voter fraud. I don't know of a single case where people didn't get jail time. They don't care if you're a nice old lady who's never done anything bad in your life. You're going to. So people don't do that. Also, you've got to, you know, yeah, there's some elections that have been decided by one vote. But I got to tell you, for the most part, most people understand that if you steal one vote, you ain't changing nothing. All you're doing is risking jail time. So I'm not worried about that. What I am worried about is if the state, for example, has wrong addresses and they are sending you a ballot to one address, then they get the request from you for another address. They may say, oh, you're registered at two addresses, and completely and wipe out your registration. Or they may say, oh, we have you down at that address, and send the ballot, the mail-in ballot, to the wrong address, or not send it to the right address, and you don't get it in time. So I'm very, very concerned that the voters are being shafted. Like I say, 28% loss in the New York primary, and that's a state where the governor and the city and everyone is promoting and encouraging mail-in ballots, and they screwed it up six ways against the middle. And they're not even hostile to mail-in voting. What happens when you get to Ohio and Georgia and North Carolina and Tennessee? I'm very, very worried about mail-in voting. People not getting their ballot or not getting them counted. Don't let it be you.
I've heard Joe Rogan talk about, why can't we just vote, through an app or something like that. He's like, we do banking online. Why don't we just... if we can put our personal information online, why can't we vote through an app? I mean, making it easier does make sense, because like we talked about, people already don't want to take the time to vote, or at least many people don't. So the easier it is, the less inconvenience it is, the more likely people will do it.
Well, in fact, let me pick that up and tell you where we're making advance on that. Did you know that 1/3 of all military personnel that asked for mail-in vote never got it? And same with Americans who live abroad. So after the 2000 election, we were required to keep records. And yet we lose, I said 1 in 5 mail-in ballots are lost in the citizenry. But 1 in 3 mail-in ballots were lost from the military. 1 in 3 military ballots were lost because they never got to the soldiers. You know, they would get moved around and just went to the other place. So they have a new system for military personnel abroad and Americans abroad. If you do, they do have an app. And you can download, you can't vote through the app, through the mail, because we still don't know how to secure it. But you can download the ballot. And that makes a huge difference. Instead of waiting for the ballot to arrive at your post in Afghanistan, you can get the ballot, comes to you through your phone or your computer, and then it's printed out, and then you mail it back in. Hopefully it gets in time. That's still a problem. But yeah, they have it where there's no reason not to have the ballot online, and you print it out, but you have to put your citizen identity, you know, your citizenship identification and your signature on that, because it can only be one ballot per voter, and they match it against the list. It's not that big a deal. It's not that frightening. It's not that odd. And we can even give PIN numbers to people for their particular ballot. Every ballot has a remember, when you get a mail-in ballot, it's actually a double item, triple item, because you got the outer ballot with your information, then you stick your ballot into an envelope called the safety envelope, and you put your information on that, and you put that inside another envelope. So, you know, we already get all this information from voters. We would just do it but instead of having to mail them the ballot with all this stuff, you simply print it out and send it back in. That would absolutely, you know, am I agreeing with Joe Rogan? Yeah, I guess I am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's it's funny because he gets called a right winger sometimes, but he's had Bernie. He's had Bernie on. Everything he says, he's just a person. He's a comedian. He's a martial artist with an opinion, and everything he says gets completely blown out of proportion because everything's clickbait now. Where it's just like, if Joe Rogan said this, and it becomes. I mean, sometimes I don't always listen to a show, but when I do, and I'll hear him say something, don't think it's newsworthy, and next thing you know, it's a headline on an article. Joe Rogan said this, and it's like he's just two people having a conversation. I mean, it's no different than our conversation we're having right now. If we're as famous as him, somebody could take a little clip of what you might have said or I might have said it and said, hey, look, Greg Palast is voting for Trump, you know, according to this, you know, and then next thing you know, nobody reads the article. As you know, people read headlines.
Why read?
Yeah, people just read the headlines. They don't read the articles. So, you know, he's had Bernie on. He's had Gary Johnson on. He's had, you know, and I think people need more of that, of people who are exploring different ideas, willing to. You know, he had Andrew Yang on, people who are just willing to just share and challenge ideas. I think that's kind of a lost art.
Well, here's the thing. What he does is he's the everyman. And, you know, you're kind of the everyman with a little information, with a lot of information. So you're the informed everyman. That's a difference. But he's just the average guy. So he's pretending to be, I'm just the average guy. What would the average guy ask Hillary Clinton? What would the average guy ask? What's the average guy pissed off about? And these are questions and comments that have been ignored. The reason why you have a guy like Joe Rogan rise in notoriety is that he's the everyman that's been ignored. And whether it doesn't matter whether you agree with his philosophy or not, who cares? Who cares what a wrestler says, you know, or the martial artist? Okay, fine. If he's not talking about how to take someone down, I don't really care about his foreign policy views. But I'm interested in the idea that there are people now, especially with the net and this type of broadcasting, where it's Ricardo and Joe and others. And yeah, you're far more, you know, pride yourself and should be on being very informed on issues. But you're asking questions which rarely get asked in those press conferences, in those formal settings on the mainstream media, where everyone is like super polite. No one would dare ask a difficult question or just saying, you know, I'm sick of this. You know, I mean, you know, there's no question that I'm talking about how Hillary really, if you counted all the votes and let all the people vote in Wisconsin, she would have won Wisconsin and in Michigan, and she would have won that race if there was no impediments to voting. But the truth is, it had to be close enough to steal. Like, why would you go to Michigan and Wisconsin and defend NAFTA? That's, you might as well hit yourself in the head with a hammer, Hillary. Well, at least she stayed out of Wisconsin. People say, why didn't she campaign in Wisconsin? She would have won. No, she would have been killed if she'd have shown up. Because she was pro-NAFTA in a state that was devastated by NAFTA. So then you have to ask yourself, well, wait a minute. So the elites don't hear this. They don't hear. And so they're never listening. And so I'm very concerned that what you have done is something incredibly valuable, which is to ask questions which don't get asked, which is to put out views that don't get put out, which is to ask, in your case, you do it with an informed spin, but you're basically asking the questions that the average voter really wants answered, and not the fluff, and not, oh, did the Russians steal the election? And all people don't care about. They want to know what's going to happen with their jobs. They want to know if they're going to survive a virus. They don't care about this back and forth. They don't care who Donald Trump has put his creepy fingers into or something like that. It's icky, but that's not. You know, let's get to the issues, which is what you're doing. And it's amazing. You know, you think, you know, like all these highfalutin outlets are talking about silly stuff while you're talking about the substance. So I appreciate being on your program.
Yeah. Well, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I've seen you on many of the shows that I listen to and watch. And I think that's one of the reasons why alternative media podcasts have really risen, because of the fact that mainstream shows don't even have people on like you who are, you know, you're not even pushing a agenda. You're not trying to specifically pinpoint all your investigation on one person to make them look bad. I mean, you're just kind of going wherever the information takes you. And yet you're still very much not, it doesn't seem like you're invited on a lot of these mainstream new shows.
It's difficult. I get some, but the thing is, the truth is, it's very difficult because I don't adhere literally to a party line. If you're on Fox, you have to be, you know, repeat the Republican line. If you are on MSNBC, you've got to be a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat for the most part. I mean, there's exceptions to all these things. And I've been on Fox and I've been on MSNBC, so I don't want to say it's universal, but they prefer, it's punditry. It's like it's commenting back and forth from a partisan view. And it doesn't fit for me because I'm an odd fish for them. They think, oh, well, you're a Trump basher. And I say, wait, but you went after the Democrats too. How could you do that? And it's like, well, the answer is because I don't pick out your party before I begin an investigation. It's a very difficult thing. It was horrible what I saw here in California, what the Democratic Party did. And it's horrible what I saw the Republican Party try to pull off in Wisconsin. It was horrible what I saw the Republicans pull off in Georgia. And it was terrible what I saw the Democrats do in New Mexico. In fact, the Democrats were so effective in knocking out voters they didn't like in New Mexico, which are other Democrats, right? Because Democrats go after Democrats for primaries. Their targets are other Democrats. They did such a damn good job that Republicans won in a state where white people are truly a minority. So how did Republicans win? Because the Democrats were stealing each other's votes and were so good at it that the Republicans just snuck in. So I'm not partisan. It's like if, in fact, you know what the truth is? If you're stealing so many votes that you lose your own election, hey, man, this is one of the problems that Hillary Clinton had. Like you kept bringing up shafting Bernie. And if you read my book, in fact, there's a chapter called California Reman about what happened to Sanders in 16 and 20. The book was, by the way, just finished. So it includes the 2020 primaries. So it's very fresh. But, you know, they shafted Bernie Sanders. Then they walk back and say, well, why aren't the Bernie people voting for me? Well, I'm sorry when you kick someone in the teeth and then say, and don't forget to vote for me. It's not the best campaign line I've ever heard. And so, you know, I'm fascinated by that. But I appreciate that you are noting this because that I am going after both parties and I'm going and I'm tough on both parties because someone has to say I'm for the voters. And one of the problems is we get too much of the partisan back and forth. So like Trump said, oh, voting by mail is terrible. So immediately all the Democrats run out and say, voting by mail is wonderful. And I'm saying, hold on a second. I hate to say it, Democrats. Voting by mail is terrible, but not for the reasons Donald Trump is saying. He's saying, oh, the Democrats are going to have, you know, ballots from Bolivia and they're going to steal the election. No, 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 no. That's silly. Okay. I don't know how else. It's just silliness. But there is a big problem, and we saw it in New York. And I was being – I got to tell you, the Democrats were crazy. I had people cut off funding to me, everything, because I said mail-in balloting is a real danger. We've got to fix it or not do it because it's dangerous. You don't get your ballot count. You don't get it or you don't get it counted. This is a problem. And no one – you know, I couldn't get a Democrat to support saying let's fix this system until New York. Suddenly – when Democratic 28% of – remember, these are all Democrats voting in the primary. It's all Democrats. 28% of their votes don't get counted, and suddenly they're saying, oh, mail-in balloting is a disaster. Oh, excuse me. Who told you that? Now fix it. Fix it instead of saying – it's very easy to say Trump is crazy. Okay, you want to say Trump is crazy? Great. What does that get you? You still have a problem. You still have a problem that – the post office doesn't want to postmark ballots that are pre-stamped, and yet your law says they have to be postmarked to be counted. Now what? Geniuses, fix it.
Yeah, and something you said is so true too. How you don't, you know, you're not as people don't invite you on their show as much because you don't just pick a team, and it's not obvious what team you're on and whatnot. I mean, it's the same thing with a lot of these shows. Like, I think the reason why Rogan's a lot of people who listen to my show are people who also listen to Rogan's because of that exact reason, because I'm willing to have somebody on like Professor Richard Wolff to talk about the history of Marxism. And yet the next show I'll talk about, you know, I'll have a libertarian on, I'll have Scott Horton on and talk about that stuff. And to me, I think people
Put them in the same room together, please.
See, I love doing that type of stuff. I try to have you know, I as many roundtable discussions as possible and have people together who have maybe some conflicting ideas. And you'll be surprised how many people, when they're together having a discussion, I haven't had anybody be uncivil or rude or, you know, or anything like that. I mean, I think, I mean, and knock on wood, I've been pretty.
I've had two. No, I have to say, it's very funny. I've had two hosts who've hung up on me. One is named Sean Hannity. And I believe, I'm not sure, but I believe he's a Republican. He might be. Sean Hannity hung up on me. And then a guy named Richard Green, who's like a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. He was Air America, right? He's an Air America host. And he hung up on me because he says, I love the Democratic Party. And I said, well, if you're going steady with the Democrats, that's fine, but I can't help you. I'm just a journalist. And that didn't work. So basically I had the Hannity types and the Democratic Party stalwarts. They're not crazy about me because I can't help them. One thing I can do though, I mean, so often I tend to have a lot of Democrats say kind things about my stuff because right now when you have the ruling party is Republican and they have control in a lot of legislatures. So it's the rulers that I go after. And at the moment, the Republicans are the rulers. So they're going to get more of my caustic ink, and they're going to be more of a target of investigation. But, you know, when Clinton was when Bill Clinton was president, especially, I did some pretty heavy duty investigations of his little operation. So, you know, and that didn't endear me to a lot of Democrats, I got to tell you. But I don't know what to do about it. But that's why I say read How Trump Stole 2020. And if you think it's a partisan book, you won't buy the end. But you will learn how to save your vote and save the votes of people around you and know how they're trying to shoplift this election.
Awesome, awesome. I know you're a very busy man, so I don't want to take up too much more of your time. But your book, like you said, is available. And do you prefer people going to your website, Amazon? Does it matter?
Go wherever books are sold or shoplifted. I get the same royalty even if it's shoplifted. There's the book. But you can go to – the other reason to go to gregpalace.com is to get the updates, get the ballot condom, which is in the book, but it's also on my site. And I really, really – yeah, I want people to go to gregpalace.com, sign up, and also go to my Facebook page, Greg Palace Investigates, or Twitter, Greg_Palace. This is great. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, Greg. I really appreciate the conversation. Hopefully I have you on again in the near future.
You will. Thank you.
Thanks,
very
Greg.
Much.
Hey, bye. Take care.